This is the MLW Radio Network.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Strigger, as always, joined by Dylan Fox from Tennessee. Beautiful Tennessee, beautiful hot Tennessee. It is a hot summer day, both in Dylan's hometown and in my hometown, actually. Dylan, how are you doing?
You know, it's warm, like we talked about. I've seen hotter. It gets up there way up into the 100 degree, you know, I think that would be like 40 Celsius or something like that. Very, very hot. This is not as bad as that. It's a milder summer day. You know, Memphis is interesting. It's one of those places. It's in the middle of America, right? So sometimes in the summer, it'll get really hot. In the winter, it'll snow and get really cold. We don't really have one or the other. There's some places like your Florida that'll always be hot. And then there's some places like, you know, Minnesota up north, it might be a little bit cooler, you know, a little bit more chill in the summer. Not cold, obviously, everywhere has summertime, but still, you know, it's a good day here. You know, Memphis, you know, I always have love for my hometown, no matter what happens. And I have a special love for not just my hometown, but also all the way to Germany. Across the Atlantic, the All-Atlantic. We are the true All-Atlantic champions, not Pac, although we like him. I think we can agree on that. Pac's cool. Shout out to Pac. But we are here to talk about the thing we love most, Japanese pro wrestling. And before we do that, I do have to say one thing. Shout out to all the listeners that checked the show out last episode, the half-year award show, always one of my favorites of the year. We had a really healthy amount of votes in, lots of different opinions, lots of interesting takes from the listeners, lots of interesting takes from you as well, Strigger. I was really enjoying your award picks. I think you had a great ones. I don't think there was any that you said that I was like, oh my God, what?
Thank you. Usually that's like one category where you completely go crazy and rip it apart. This time, I think I had my homework done, but the same goes for you, Dylan.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I we did get a lot of feedback that agreed with me that they wanted the mystery of the most underrated. But you know, it's one of those things you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. You know, now we all know you've approved it. You are the one that decided this. Just like the Forbidden Door, I left it out in your hands, Strigger. But we still made do with it. It still ended up a great episode. Maybe a little less ranting than usual on the most underrated. But it was a very fun thing. It was never angry ranting about the most underrated. Just very amusing more than anything. But now we have a new era of most underrated, a new era of the Half Year Awards, and a new era of the Eastern Lariat. And I'm so happy to be here talking about some really big things, because like we have some actually, you know, there's some weeks where there's cool stuff happening. I think there's never a week where it's dull, but this time we have major, major box office type of shows in terms of the big show. So I'm really fired up for that. I know people have a lot of takes of their own. I hope that they all feel free to let us know what they have to say. If they agree with us, disagree, maybe we'll disagree. Who knows? Maybe you'll drive me insane. I'll jump out the window if you say something too
outrageous. I hope not.
No, I'm just kidding. I mean, like I said, you know, that's the thing. You know, it's a summer day. You leave the window open. I'm pretty on the ground floor. You know, I can just like kind of it, like it's kind of like
I was just going to say, aren't you on the ground floor?
That's what I'm saying.
You jump out of the window.
Yeah, it's not as dramatic as you maybe thought there. I just it's kind of like entering the ring rope. You just step into the windowsill and you know, lean under the window and get out of there. Yeah. And then you're on the ground floor. That's the benefits of being on the ground floor. Although, you know, sometimes, you know, there's people upstairs in my apartment building. They're stomping on the floor and stuff and making crazy noises, but I can't control them. Just this weekend, somebody was yelling and screaming and he was playing a video game, I think, an online game, because he was saying, how do you reload this thing? And you could hear him from the bottom. I hope it was a video game there. So he was yelling and screaming, and then he said, I did it at the end. So I want to tribute the guy upstairs who beat his whatever game he was playing. I don't know what it was, but he finally yelled out that he did it at the end, and we all knew on the bottom floor.
Oh, wow. Shout out to him. And on the topic of the guy upstairs, that's me right now. I'm at my parents' place for a couple of weeks now in the summer. And actually, Dylan, you know, usually I do a lot of work with my head, you know, as being a teacher, that usually comes with it. But whenever I'm here, I try to do something on the house. So on this morning, I just painted the garden wall. The wall from my parents' house to the garden side, I painted in lovely white, so it shines once again. So this was my change of pacing, not working with my head, but with my hands today. So that's awesome. Was really good. Yeah, I really like that, to have a change in here. But now I'm back working with my head now here once again with the Eastern Laird and you. And you mentioned it. We are the All Atlantic podcast. That's a really nice disclaimer we should add to the podcast. And luck would have it, Dylan, that we're recording this episode on Umi no Hi, a public holiday in Japan. That is the Ocean Day. So very in line with our new tagline.
Absolutely. That's how it should be. And you know who else is near the Atlantic, Striga?
Who is?
The Isle of Jersey. A shout out to our listener as well.
Yes, and the Isle of Man as well.
And the Isle of Man, all the Isles. We this is the All Isle podcast right now. Whatever island you're from, you have a home on the Eastern Lariat. Like I said, this whole world, we established this last week, but yes, the whole world has a home with the Eastern Lariat, and I cannot wait to get into it, because like you said, the ocean, just like I told you, you know, the ocean's not something I'm overtly familiar with. Again, middle America type of person. America's very big, you know, lots of land. So it's kind of hard to get to the beach, to be honest, unless you make an effort to do it, which I have not. But that doesn't mean I don't respect it. I respect the ocean. I respect what's under the ocean. I respect Godzilla. That's where he comes from. And that's why we love him. And that's what is really representing this podcast right now, is because we know if shit hits the fan, Godzilla is Earth's last line of defense, and he will pop up out of that Atlantic Ocean, and he will defend you, me, and every single person to listen to this. So I think we need to give it up for Godzilla right now, for protecting us and protecting this very podcast that we all know and love so much.
I did not expect the Godzilla part, but I was going to say, Dylan, you know, someone also was swept away by an ocean of booking decisions, maybe. And that someone is Jake Lee in All Japan Pro Wrestling. Jake Lee just won the Triple Crown from Kento Miyahara in Ottawa at this Champions Night 4 a couple of weeks ago, actually, just 1 month ago, actually. And we all figured, yes, this first defense against Zuama would be like like the first defense that a champion usually has. Of course, they got a big name for the defense, so there always is this little doubt that comes with it, but everybody was very sure that they would just continue his reign that he was supposed to have when he got injured in December. Yeah, and then just not even a month after that, on July 14, he lost the belt to Zuama in a very puzzling decision, in a very puzzling match as well, because Zuama had Toshiso and Minoru Tanaka with his side, and they all kept interfering, and they weren't even ejected from the building. They could just go on and on and on, while Jake Lee, he had nobody by his side. Even though he's apparently now friends with the Aoyagi brothers, they had the semi-main and apparently couldn't make it to the ring. That's at least what I make of that. But Jake Lee didn't have any friends, which in the end led to him losing the Triple Crown to Big Daddy Voodoo Murder Zuama, while also Toshitsu and Minoru Tanaka won the All Asia Tag Team title, and Toshitsu is also the Gaara TV champion, so they are basically doing what we're all expecting from, or what we're already seeing from Bullet Club in New Japan Pro Wrestling. They are strapping everybody in Voodoo Murders to put the heat behind the stable, Dylan. They need the heat.
Well, they have a lot of that. I will say that online, it felt like afterwards, and not the good kind of heat.
Twitter shut down.
That's true, yeah. That's
immediately right. After the three count, I wanted to post something about that, and it didn't work for like an hour.
That's true, and I think we can point to this exact moment when it happened that Twitter itself just had enough. It crashed, but Twitter did come back, and we all got to see our takes on that and have our takes on that. So Suwama, the new champion, through
once
the
again,
power...
for the eighth time. No.
Yes, not that new, but no. the new in the recent sense. Through the power of friendship. I like the way you set that up. Jake Lee has no friends. No one likes this man, and that led to his demise. Unlike Suwama, who has many friends who will willingly break the rules and ruin matches and do terrible things for him. Is that the lesson that we're supposed to learn from this, that you need rule-breaking friends to succeed in life? Is that what All Japan, is that the lesson that they're trying to teach the children right now, Striga? Because I'm not a big fan of that.
I'm not a big fan of it either, so I hope not. I hope there's someone, some guy that will eventually get on his horse and be the knight in the shining armor to get all these heels, these dastardly cheating heels out of the company once again. Because, I mean, Tanaka was there, and it's a choice to bring back as the Voodoo Murders version of him. Shuji Kondo was there too, also as a Voodoo Murderer. I can imagine him in a much better role. Then they have Ryuji Hijikata as Toshitsu. He's fine, but they also brought Taro back. So these are all a gang of outsiders, basically, except for Suwama. And the final decision has to be that someone from within the company with All Japan wins the title back, right? Or will they just go to Yuji Nagata winning the Royal Road Tournament and defeating Suwama?
Yes, that's what I predicted all along. If you remember last month, that was almost assuredly going to happen. And why would I change my mind now after this? Now, here's the thing. Like,
did you think that this was the plan all along, to just have Lee as a transitional champion?
If it was, I don't understand why.
That's the thing that I don't get either.
So, like I said, I've said this before. It felt like there was that show in May where all of the factions broke up and everything's changed, and there was a ton of turns, and they brought Suwama turned heel, and, you know, Total Eclipse is done, and Next Stream is also done, or at least virtually changed. Evolution's done. It's like all of this happened in the course of basically one show, and they hit the huge reset button. So it really felt like from there, it felt like a left turn. But whatever the plan was, it feels like that's... It feels like, to me, the plan... I could definitely buy Yuji Nagata challenging in the main event as the plan all along. The stuff mm-hmm. with Jake and Suwama is really just strange. Why did they even do this with Jake? Was it... This, to me, here's how I read this. This is a completely subjective opinion. Who knows at the end of the day? This feels like throwing him a bone, like this 1 month reign. It's like he got injured during his title reign. He never lost the title. They wanted to wrap that whole thing up, and they maybe felt a little downtrodden for this guy. They want to keep his morale up, and they maybe, if they wanted to have Suwama go in, they clearly, to me, I will say this, they clearly had plans for Voodoo Murders. Ever since they brought them in, this was going to be a big time deal for the company. So that leads you to believe that this could have been in the works for a while, but I just don't understand why, because they had everything set up so perfectly, seemingly, after the Champion Carnival final, with Yuma winning. They had a ready-made story, a ready-made main event. It felt big time, but instead they've thrown their wagons behind the Voodoo Murders storyline here.
And also, that's what they wasted another Kento Miyahara waiting for, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. And that Kento reign, like, that was showing improvements. Throughout, like, the company was going up after he won the title. You know, it felt like things were turning around. You know, by the time we got to the Champion Carnival, like I said, it felt like things were going in a good direction. Even when Jake won, you know, we saw some good numbers. You know, they did some good stuff at Corquin, got some, you know, good stuff there. Why did they change it?
Yeah, and I remember Suwama's last reign as champion that went on for over 400 days. We were all dreading this by the end. I mean, you were dreading this from the start, but we were dreading this at the end, definitely. And
not in terms of in-ring work. It's just he's not interesting as a champion.
Yeah.
Is the problem.
True.
Like, with him. Like, him as a worker, he's great. Like, he could have great matches if they, maybe not this role, like, because I mean, I wasn't a huge fan of this match personally with Jake Lee. I didn't think this was a great match by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
You know, so it's going to depend on this role, but I have nothing against him as a worker. He's not a good wrestler. He's a great wrestler,
yeah.
Even now. But it's just him as a character was not, like, I say this all the time, like, there's good wrestlers and great wrestlers. Not everybody needs to be champion. You know, that doesn't mean I don't like them as performers. It's just that he's not the right choice to be champion, in my opinion.
Zawama's perfect role in this company right now would be to guide a younger talent as a tag team and be tag team champion for another reign with a new guy, maybe. That would be a perfect role.
They were doing that. And they
were doing that, yes.
That no, we don't want him doing that. They told us that when they broke that team up. And I was very down on that when it happened, because I didn't understand why they needed to do that. But here's where my ultimate point is. I feel, you know, this was a business decision, ultimately, to like, Nagata, to me, is going to win this tournament and main event at Budokan. I want to see how all this plays out. I know everyone thinks that I hate this, and I'm not a fan personally of the wrestling, but I can't bring myself to just trash this and call it so terrible until we see that Budokan number. If this all plays off, you know, if this all pays off, then I can at least understand it. You know, I can rationalize it in my head if it all pays off in the end. But I mean, from a storytelling perspective, I just don't see a lot of good defenses for this in terms of a good story or entertainment value. For me personally, as the kind of fan I am, I'm not super into it. But I want to give this a chance, and I have an open mind toward the Budokan, what they're going to do with Nagata. I want to give it a chance, because we've seen recently there's been stuff where, you know, in other companies that we're going to talk about later, stuff that looked like it was going to be one way, and then suddenly it all played out differently. You know, at the end of the day. So I want to at least be open-minded to this. The first step of this and him being the champion, there's no scenario where Suwama being a champion is what I think is the right call. But I want to give it a shot until Budokan. And if it pays off, then I will praise them for it and say, hey, this all worked out. They did this Voodoo Murder storyline. If it keeps going on and on and on with Voodoo Murders, and it just keeps, you know, if we're at the end of the year and they're still doing this, then, I mean, that's going to be a real – we're going to have some real negative takes on the show.
It's going to be a stretch.
Yeah, but I want to give it a chance until Budokan, even though I don't like it as a personal entertainment value.
So what I think, to your point of throwing Jake Lee a bone, what I think happened here is you mentioned this booking change in May, and around that time – they probably also got the go for the New Japan guys to come in, for Tiger Mask and for Yuji Nagata. So one, the booking changed in May, and then they got the decision for Nagata. And so this was another point in time where some booking decisions changed. Because remember, we pretty much were hinted at that Yuma Aoyagi would be winning the title in Budokan. That would have been the logical decision, and it seemed like the road to go, but suddenly they completely stopped the guy's push, and they put him in the program with Naoya Nomura and Mitsuki Watase, with the Real Blood. So then Jake Lee wins the title from Kento Miyahara, and now they have this storyline going where Suwama invited Kento Miyahara to join the Voodoo Murders as well. This is just from today's show in Osaka. And last week in Tokyo Sports, Jake Lee brought up the idea as champion to not participate in the Royal Road tournament, which is what Suwama exactly said also on this show in Osaka, that he would not be going into the tournament as champion and wants the winner of the tournament to be his challenger. So that all screams Yuji Nagata. So I don't rule out that there was a decision that was pretty close to the show, maybe not an audible call on the same day, but a couple of days earlier. But I could also see that they were not happy with the number they did in Ottawa, which was basically the same that they did for the first show, but they had this strong competition with the match. We talked about that. So they should have been pretty happy with that. And then there is the idea, okay, we have Budokan coming up. We have to do something. And we're panicking at this moment. So that ultimately, in my opinion, all played a role into taking the title off Jake Lee. So I don't really think that it was just to throw him a bone and say, hey, you got to get the title for 1 month. Because that ultimately is a bad decision. Because they once again have Jake Lee at the bottom of the table again.
Well, whatever the reasons were, it's still a bad decision.
it's got awful decision, yes.
Yeah.
So, sometime around that time, all these decisions, in my opinion, all these numbers, the changes led to this decision to basically reset this title run in the first defense. But however you want to look at it, it, from a business standpoint, makes sense. Maybe we'll see about that, as you said.
We have to see. My gut is not positive on this.
No,
I want to give it a chance.
I've seen the former owner of this All Japan Odo wrote a website from Strong Style Spirit, Irvin, also say that a lot of fans in Japan just don't want Zuwama versus Nagata as the main event in Budokan, but that's very likely now.
And maybe, you know, if your theory is true, maybe they can pull another switcheroo, you know, at the end of this. And maybe that's what they're setting up with Kento. That can set up Kento. You know, because, like, the way the brackets work, Kento and Nagata would be the semifinals in all likelihood. Yes. And I think if Nagata's going to lose to anybody, Kento is the one that it would be. I don't think New Japan would let him lose to anybody else on the roster. And even that's, you know, where... We have to have faith on this, that they will let him lose to anybody in this tournament. But if they were...
And Zuwama and Kento are facing in the first round.
Yeah. I thought Zuwama said he wasn't going to be in the tournament.
Yeah, he just said that today, but they announced the tournament last week already, and they haven't said anything about that yet. The company hasn't.
Well, then I'm guessing he's not going to be in the tournament. They'll
probably put someone else in. Yeah, the matches as we have it for the Royal Road tournament that starts on August 7 and goes all the way through August 20, I think. Yes, August 20. So the first show has, as I mentioned, at this point in time, Miyahara versus Wama, then Jake Lee versus Ren Ayabe from JDO, Atsuki Aoyagi versus Takuya Nomura from Big Japan, and Yuma Aoyagi versus Naoya Nomura in a big grudge match between the two. And the second night with the first round matches has Shuji Ishikawa versus Cyrus, the new big foreigner that came in and that already squashed Black Mensore in under 2 minutes. Shotaro Ashino versus Dan Tamura, Takuro Mori versus Ryuki Honda, Yoshitatsu versus Yuji Nagata. So that's the lineup we have there, a solid tournament lineup. Some people were questioning why Hokuto Mori isn't in the tournament, but now it turned out that he's once again challenging for the junior heavyweight title. So that will be his program for August. So, yeah, that's the Royal Road.
Let me ask you this, you know, because, you know, they had teased Nagata coming in, and I think late April he made a tweet that was like, hey, I'm thinking about coming into All Japan. So like you said, maybe that sets something up by the end of May. They had the wheels in motion. You know, and that it plays off of, too, of the Corken Hall show where they worked together. They might have been happy with that, that all played out. You know, that might have been a factor in it, too. But what I was going to say was there's one thing we have to look at. Yuma himself is not nearly as hot as he was when he won the Champion Carnival. You know, at the moment. And my question to you is, and this is, it's not even me saying it, it's just me throwing it out there and guess an idea of what's going to happen, what's going on. Do you think that whatever happened with Nomura, and now he's back in the fold, this whole time, ever since he got into the company and got back in, he's been calling out main event dudes. Like all the main guys, Kento, Jake, Yuba. Is it possible that him coming back may have cause them to maybe pull the brakes on? Maybe they see something in Nomura as a potential main event guy, a story with him that could be there, and they wanted to pull back on this Yuma deal with Nomura coming in.
I haven't actually thought about that. My first gut feeling is at this point, probably not, because they have a heel champion right now, and they brought in Nomura as a heel as well. So I don't see that happening right away.
What do you mean?
I mean, he's a heel, obviously. You know,
right? I'm just saying in the grand scheme of things. I'm not even talking about the tournament or anything. I'm just saying It feels like they pulled back on Yuma.
Yeah.
Nomura got it. I'm not even talking about the tournament or anything like that. I'm just saying in the grand scheme of things, do you think that they pulled back on Yuma because Nomura came back?
No, I think Yuji Nagata got the spot.
Yeah, but what do you think Nomura's overall, what do you think his overall ceiling is right now? Do you think that there's a big plan for him coming in?
That all depends on if he's willing, to stick around with the company, and if the company wants him to be a main player once again for them, because remember, he once left the company, and usually when that happens, there is some trust that's lost along the way in these Japanese companies. Whenever you're not a full-time lifer for a company, they will not push you as the main guy anymore. I can see him becoming the main guy. But right now, it's too early, I think, to make a real prediction for that, I think.
I think it's going to be interesting that Yuma and Nomura match in the tournament. Going in there, because it just seems to me like, you know, at the end of the day, just base value, and you know, it may not mean anything. They might not have had plans for Yuma right now either way. But it just feels like ever since Nomura's come back, Yuma has been on the back burner pretty majorly. And Nomura, meanwhile, is calling out all the main event guys. Like, they're clearly slotting him as a main event guy. I'm not saying the guy, but they have really pushed him hard, you know, ever since he's came back. You know, new look, even with this team with Watase and stuff. And like you said, like, who knows what can change in the future. But it just seems interesting, the timing of it all. Because to me, Yuma had it. When he won that Champion Carnival, that was the guy, in my opinion. Like they had him. And they've went away from it for Nagata or whatever reason. I just think it's a really questionable decision.
Very questionable. Another point that I was thinking about a couple of days ago too, Dylan, is very questionable is also their scheduling of their shows. If you have your big tournament, the big annual tournament, the Champion Carnival in April, why don't you have a real big show in May? I mean, there's Golden Week and everybody is running their big shows, but All Japan is usually just doing like Osaka Eden Arena number 2. Or they are going to Nagoya for a show. But they are not doing a big show. But they are doing their Budokan show now in September, where they usually are doing the Royal Road Tournament. So they switched that around. But why couldn't they have done a bigger show like in May? They instead opted to do a show in March and June, which at the point felt like it was both a very... I wouldn't say it was a cold show, because fans were hyped for the show, but there was no real hype amidst fans that aren't usually following the company. So nobody really came in for that show. So it all feels so odd to me when it comes to how they set up their shows and how they schedule things around the company.
Yeah, that's a great point. I really agree with you on paper. The only thing I can say is we don't know the business decision like behind the scenes in terms of how they negotiated the building. Maybe September was a lower rate or something like that. These are things we don't really have the full knowledge of. Mm-hmm. But on paper, what you said is absolutely right. You know, if all things were equal, it should have just been in May or maybe June. If they had switched the June show to the Budokan, I think that they could have played that off and had the big plan for that. You know, had a big winner for that. The Champion Carnival winner challenge is there if they wanted, but they went against it for some reason. And also, I think it's worth mentioning too, this Budokan, this is their biggest show in a long time. Mm. They're really dipping their toes in the water here. This is not even like something that has been super built up or anything like that. They're dipping their toes in the water of this Budokan, and we're going to have to – and that's what I'm saying. There's so many questions that nobody has the answers to right now. When that Budokan show happens, And if that number is not at a high level, I think we're going to be able to look at this and really be able to talk about why did it happen this way, what went wrong. If it becomes a big success, then I think that that's something they're going to be able to hang their hat on, but hopefully not at too much cost to someone like an Aoyagi. And, you know, Aoyagi is still a young guy. You know, I just, to me, I've always said this. I remember when Kento first won the title, like, you know, 6 years ago. Now, a lot of people were saying Zeus should have won the title back then. Because they had Suwama had to give up the title due to injury. Go had just left the company. And I remember saying, you have a storyline here. You have lightning in a bottle with this Miyahara. Just go with it. Like, don't overthink it. Don't hold off because he's not ready. Do it. And they did it. And the next month versus Omori had a huge, like, you know, there was way more interest in that with the first title defense versus Omori rather than that. So to me, I've always said about anybody, you look at the champions, you look at the main draws of Japan right now. Those guys who I consider singular, you know, difference makers, people that have been proven. I would say Okada in New Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And you could argue Naito and Tanahashi, they're legacy guys. But in terms of the people that have come along in the past decade, like, I would say Okada in New Japan, Kento in All Japan, and Takeshita in DDT. Those would be the biggest guys I would point to that are singular draws. Like, you could say New Japan, you could point to attendances on their own. But those guys were the ones that were pushed so hard, that so heavy, that the people... There were fans, especially among the English speakers, that always complained about them and their push. And I can relate. I didn't always love Okada's push at the end of the day. I always thought that they went too hard on him at times. But at the end of the day, these guys have become true stars. And who else has there been? Who has had the story where they constantly get undercut and have become a main star in the last decade?
Yeah, absolutely right.
And that's really how I think. Like, if you want to have a star, if you believe in a guy, you just do it. You don't go through all of these hoops and bells and whistles. Like, that's the evidence that's been presented to us over the last decade. So that's what scares me when I see Aoyagi take a little bit of a slide down. And Nomura, like you said, the future is up in the air. Whatever they're doing with Kento, I don't know. I let me say this, too. I don't personally hate the idea of a new coat of paint on Kento after all this time. My only caveat to that would be is that what he was doing before was working. Like, him as champion did a good job all throughout his title reign. So I really don't think he's broke as a character. But I also, as a fan, I can see why they might want to take, add a fresh coat of paint to him, whatever their plan is. And maybe that's not even a plan, but it's just something I'm thinking about here. When you look at the Aoyagi push, I think that if you want to have a guy, you want to make a guy, and you want him to be a big star, you just go with it. Don't make him go through all these hoops. So that was my point.
Yes, and what also held him back, as I pointed out, was the scheduling of it all, because they felt the need to do the title match in May. And the match itself was very good.
And let me ask you this too, not to interrupt you, but what about that match and also the T-Hawk match of the same month? So, like, did they really have to do it in May, or did they purposely do this?
They felt the need to do that. As I said, they didn't have to do that, but they figured we got to do this. We have these two challenges lined up, and we're doing this before we got the next champion with Jake Lee.
Yeah. I wonder why they felt the need to do that.
Yeah,
that's another question that I've always looked at that T-Hawk title defense and been, why? Like, why did it have to be now? Like, why? You know, just why? Why? So many questions in this company just end up with why.
I can answer one question, Dylan, because I didn't read the whole story, actually, earlier this morning. It's not like that Suwama invited Miyahara to join Voodoo Murderers, but they made the decision. Him and Taru made the decision that Suwama will be out of the Royal Road Tournament, and instead, Taru will now face Kento Miyahara in the first round. And if Miyahara loses, he has to join the Voodoo Murderers. That's what Suwama and Taro came up with.
Well, I have no interest in that match. I'll tell you that right now. But just like I said, if they wanted to go with a fresh coat of paint, this is not. There's no wrestler alive that I would say would benefit from joining Voodoo Murderers. Not a single one. But I understand why they might want to go with a fresh coat of paint with Kento. And yeah, clearly, they believe in this voodoo murder stuff, even if I don't. And there's, you know, again, we'll see what happens in Budokan, and we'll have the evidence to support it, or say this was a terrible mistake, and they've done a lot of damage for something that maybe wasn't as great as they thought it was at the end of the day.
A lot of questions up in the air, and we don't have the answers to that, Dylan. One thing I wanted to ask you when you talked about Budokan and dipping their toes into water, what do you think they can expect as a crowd size? Because Noah this past weekend drew roughly 3,200 fans, just a bit more than they did in January. So that apparently is their ceiling with Budokan, 3,000 fans. New Japan Pro Wrestling did around the same in Budokan for their Best of the Super Junior Final, 3,520 actually, and in March they did a bit over 2,000. So that's all not very big houses for Budokan. What do you think All Japan can expect?
To me, I think you have to look at it. You want to at least have the 3,000, but another wrench that's been thrown into this is, what's going to happen in terms of the restrictions and the crowd cheering? New Japan announced in September, right before that show, that they're going to bring the cheering back in September. So how will All Japan handle that? And will that itself be an added draw if that is something? Let's say All Japan says, Budokan, first show back, no restrictions, all cheering. I think that in and of itself could be a draw to certain fans, that they're finally done with the clap crowd, and that could be something that they look at. But I think, in general, you would want it to be at least 3,000, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not even a super high number in general, even in the current times. I'll talk about the Noah show a little bit more when we get to it, but I would say that the 3,000 for All Japan, that's a reasonable expectation, I would say. And especially if they do go with Nagata, we don't know what tricks are up their sleeves in terms of what are they going to do with the history of the company? Are they going to bring somebody back? Do they have a big name scheduled? We don't really know that yet. But I think if you're booking the show, whatever their plans are, you would have to think that you would want at least to not be considerably lesser than the other companies. You want to show out and show that you're at least on the same level as these other guys. So, you know, I would say, you know, 2,800 low end, you know, 32 high end. You probably want somewhere in the middle. I would say that would be about my expectation.
When's the last time they've actually had a big show like that?
And that's what I'm saying. They're dipping their toes into this. So it may be far lower for all we say. We just don't know the appetite for a big All Japan show because there hasn't been one like this in a long time. And I think they probably have that in mind too. And maybe that's why they, like you said, I do think that they're, whatever made them make the decisions that they did, I think there was an element of fear about this Budokan show.
Yeah.
That made them feel like they needed something extra to be on this, and they needed to do these things for whatever reasons. So I get that same sense that you did there. So we're going to have to see what they have in mind, what kind of names they have involved. But like you said, it's up in the air. Nobody can say for sure. And, you know, we don't know what impact the restrictions opening up will have. There's just like the whole company, there's a lot of questions that nobody really has the answers to for sure.
Well, there we go. I really thought that this was an interesting discussion about All Japan because we usually don't go like that in depth into the minds of booking decisions in Japan. But I really thought that we at least try to make sense of this, Dylan, and also try to explain this for the both of us, because to me this was very puzzling. Something else that was surprising to me, but in a good way surprising, Dylan, was Kenno winning the GHC Heavyweight Championship at NOAH Destination 2022. I watched the match live. It came on after the main event of the first day of the G1 Climax, so I watched that live, and I never actually thought about Kenno beating Satoshi Kojima because, much like Jake Lee versus Uwama, this was the first defense, and I thought that they would give Kojima a longer run with the title, and I at least thought that New Japan would request something like that, that he would at least get like two or three defenses, but no, Kenno wins the GHC heavyweight title on this show with this incredible looking moonsault double knee. Kenno had this amazing fire entrance in the main event that went viral and that I also showed to some friends today, and they said this is what wrestling needs to look like. So first, Dylan, of course, I want to talk about the main event, but also we can talk about it at the same time with Kenno's entrance and with other entrances, the stage and the entrances on the show. What do you think about the general look of the show and of the decision in the main event?
To me, it's been consistent this entire year. The production values are top-notch on all of their shows. That's really one of their calling cards from the very beginning at the New Year show to the Cyberfight Fez and now this one. They have done everything they can to make these shows feel like a big deal. They feel like a major league show. They feel like something you want to see. And I think they've done an excellent job of that all around. And that Kenno entrance was absolutely phenomenal. I completely agree with you and your friends. He looked like a megastar when he came out. And, you know, they did a good job throughout the whole event of that. The main event itself, you know, this was a stunner to me. you know, Kojima losing on the first defense. It's very interesting. And it kind of gave me a little bit of hope. You know, it's like the Grinch, his heart grew three times its size, almost. You know, my faith in Japanese wrestling grew three times its size, like, after this win.
Yes, yes. Not only that one.
Yeah, like, all of them. Because all of these promotions that use these New Japan guys, I just thought, man, they overlord all these promotions, and they're always going to get the leg up, and they're going to be able to own these titles and things like that. But it gives me hope going forward. The match itself was very good. Again, the ending of this made it even stronger than what it was. You know, I think this will be much more remembered than the Go match at Cyberfight Fest.
Yep.
Obviously, the finish was awesome. And he's really proven himself, Kenno himself, as one of the, not just in-ring, but as a talker, as a character, he's among the best in the entire company, you know, any company, I would say, in Japan, in the whole world, really. I would say he did.
And as a star.
Yeah, exactly.
Completely as a star, because that's what I thought about when I saw him and Kojima just wrestle. And I thought back to Kenno in Michinoku Pro Wrestling in his first days there in the with the company in the mid-2000s. And then I thought, okay, what was Kojima doing in the mid-2000s? Oh yeah, he was a Triple Crown champion for All Japan Pro Wrestling. So this guy can be considered in the top level, as you said, of guys, talkers, wrestlers, stars in all of Japan, and is basically, when it comes to carrying himself like a star, on a comparable level to a guy that has been basically doing it all ever since he became a main event star, Triple Crown champion, G1 winner, IWGP heavyweight champion. That's where Kenno is right now.
It's going to have to be remain to be seen, because nothing against him, but the company needs to do its part as well. To me, a star is somebody that's a true draw, like a proven, like those guys I said earlier, like those guys are stars to me. And I'm not saying Kenno's not that. I'm just saying we need to see, you know, we have to see how this title reign goes before we determine.
I was talking more about how it felt, you know?
Oh, well, yeah, obviously, he, like you said, all that stuff you said was completely true. Like, he carries himself amazingly. Like, that's what I'm saying. His character work has improved tenfold. He was always a great wrestler. Even in Michinoku Pro, he had a million different great matches. But to me, he is shown that he can carry the company in terms of a talker. And when they did that New Japan show, he was the one leading the charge, you know, talking everything at New Japan. When they went to the Tokyo Dome, he was the one on the mic representing Noah. So to me, that shows you that he is a guy that can do it. We just have to hope that the company itself can follow his lead on it and put him in positions to do that, because he has everything it takes. Like you said, to me, he's not missing anything. And like, in terms of how he carries himself, his work, his promo, his character time, his fan interaction, you know, his YouTube page, everything he does. At the end of the day, he has everything it takes to lead the company. And now, we also have to give credit to Kojima, who was very gracious in this match. He made Kenno look even bigger than he did before. He worked his ass off, and, you know, for a very short title reign. And the whole time in this feud, in all of his interviews, he built up Kenno as a great talent. Afterwards, he said Noah's in great hands and has a bright future. He did everything he could to put this man over. And I think we have to give Kojima a lot of damn credit for that, because we know that there's a lot of guys that wouldn't happen with to that extent. And he showed that he is that guy. Like, he's a great talent. Even in his 50s, he showed that he could put on two big matches. These matches, to me, they probably won't test my match of the year list, but they were so great as main events and put over Kenno and, you know, made everything look good. He was a worthy champion and a great champion to put over Kenno. And hopefully, you know, like I said, hopefully the company can follow suit on the improvements that Kenno's made, and they can continue what they set foot with this whole show. Not just him. I think this whole show, in a lot of ways, was, and like we talked about it, the attendance was not great. I think there's no way around it. To me, even the January show, to me, that didn't strike me as some terrible, you know, thing, just from an outsider. Clearly, they disagreed, and their opinion matters a lot more. But the only thing I will say about this, to defend it a little bit, it was on the same night as the first night of the G1. Maybe that had a little bit of an effect. I don't know why they scheduled another weird scheduling thing we can talk about. Why,
like, New Japan wasn't running in Tokyo.
That's true. But there might be people that just wanted to watch the New Japan show, even if it wasn't live at the arena. Yeah. It's not a good idea to run it on the same night as the first night. I don't care where it is. You know, like, it was a bad idea, and they shouldn't have done it. You know, so I don't know why they did that.
But what's interesting here, Dylan, is this: the framing of it all. I mean, they made the decision that the January draw was bad, and then they decided to run another one, or they already had made the decision early on this year, I guess, to run another one. And after they made the decision that the 3,100 whatever it was fans draw in January was bad, they had to expect a bigger house, and they didn't. So that's where I get your skepticism of it all. What is going to happen now that they once again have not reached whatever number they projected?
Look, if this ends with Muto winning the title again, would it really surprise you?
No.
And that's the thing. Like, this is not a success on its own. It's a first step, and hopefully in 6 months, they'll have they'll keep doing what they did on this show and make it right in the future. Nor does this show automatically absolve them of all the bad decisions they made over the last 6 months that led to this show and led to some, you know, listen, those Sumo Hall shows in April, it was rough. You know, that was 2000, less than 2000 junior show. Like, it was rough. So they caused this with how they've taken their company. And like you said, I'm not even trying to be skeptical. I'm just saying that this is a first step. You know, I kind of felt that way about that show I told you about earlier in All Japan. I said at the time, I said, in 6 months, we're going to say this is the point where they really took a step forward. Things took a big step up, and this is where it started. Or we're going to say this is where things really went off the rails, and that's where it looks like it's going for them. This one, same deal. In 6 months' time, at that New Year's show in 2023, this is going to be the point we can look at where is this where it turned around? Kenno's had a great run. They have an amazing N1 tournament, and they're set up for a major main event on January 1st next year. If they do all of that, they do everything right then we can say, yes, this show is where they took that step forward. But on its own, I don't think we can praise it as a great success in terms of business. From an aesthetic standpoint, though, I think that I can see why everybody was so excited about it. Because it was, to me, this was one of the best shows of the year overall. If you ask my opinion, this is one of the greatest shows of the year. Up and down the card, there were three big matches in general that I think everybody's talking about. But production-wise, the hope it gives you for the future, that hope was not there before the show. And if things had ended differently, no offense to Kojima, who I just put over a lot, if he had won that title and retained it and the Muto match had ended with him winning, that hope wouldn't have been there, even if the wrestling was just as good and the production was just as good. That hope and that interest would not have been there. So we have to look at this as a first step going forward, rather than it as a singular entity on its own, in my opinion.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the other step in the right direction in a bit here right now. It's interesting that you think of this show so highly. I mean, from the production standpoint, I completely agree. This was a great look. And I also liked the show, but I'm much more in line with the cage match ratings that we have so far. There are not many right now, there are only six, but we're at a rating of 7.14. I'm actually in that range. I also liked the main event very much. I was not a big fan of the Hayata versus Seki Yoshioka match. Once again, I thought just too long for a Hayata match. Once again, we can go over this again and again and again, and it's the same story. I really thought that the GHC tag team title match was very, very good. And
that was my match tonight, personally.
I am not surprised. I liked the story so much of these two powerhouses with Kitamiya and Inamura trying their best against the technical shooters and them just being the technical shooters, just being better at the catch-as-catch-can style. So that really put the match over to me.
I thought this was a really good match until the closing moments, or not the moments, but the last couple of minutes with Inamura and Hideki. I thought that elevated the match
The escape from the Manjigatame that got such a huge reaction from the crowd as well. And they had this great finish with Hideki countering the Muso with his elbow strikes and then just striking him to the ground with the rear neck sleeper. That was so great. And Timothy Thatcher is just incredible. Whatever he does is so fitting. His selling, when he headbutted Inamura, he sold this headbutt as like he just headbutted a wall. Or his selling when he himself does a belly-to-belly suplex. The strength he has to put in and how hard it is for him to throw a guy like Inamura around always comes across. And also when Hideki finally scored the finish here, he came into the ring right away and celebrated with him like it was his first championship win. So everything about this was great.
I love the finish of the ref stoppage too. At least they took, decent care of Inamura there, not to have him tap out. I thought they did a great job with that. And I thought the whole match was really good. I don't think there was there wasn't a lot, whole lot more I could have asked for out of this match. To be honest with you, I thought it was a great match. The main event was good, but it was more about the other matches to me were more about the finish and how they made you feel. This was about great wrestling.
Yeah,
between these two, and I mean it's cool that Hideki and Thatcher are the champions. I mean I that's awesome to me. But even if they had lost, this still would have been a great match either way. So I think that the wrestling itself started off so strong, and Inamura just an amazing talent. I also think I don't know if you want to get into the Elgin stuff too much.
What can you really say about the Elgin stuff, Michael Elgin? We start this show like half an hour after he once again dropped another statement on Facebook that is very long. And he keeps doing these long statements where he basically doesn't say anything. Like he uses a lot of words, but he doesn't have a message that he brings across. He just won't say what the issue was, but he keeps saying stuff. So whatever happened, whether he really stole the powder or whatever happened, something happened and the company made the decision to not say the reason. And when that happened, Dylan, this was immediately a red flag, because whenever a guy has like personal issues that they are aware of, the company will say the guy is off for personal reasons or for family reasons. Family reasons is usually code for there is something really wrong. But they didn't say anything about this. So he apparently was just missing. And he, in this statement, he said that he was questioned by the police and that you don't get a phone call to call anyone. And I've asked around, and that's just not true. So he's once again claiming stuff that apparently is just not true. And what else is there, Dylan? Every foreigner in the last 3 days made some sort of protein powder joke. Even on a New Japan Pro Wrestling, Jeff Cobb talked about it 3 days before this news story even broke. And they made jokes all over the place. Even in 01, they made jokes about it. So whatever happened, I don't know. But it all is very weird because the guy just keeps talking and saying nothing. Ultimately, what it comes down to ultimately is that they, as a company, they gave this guy a title and they once again were burned. And this keeps happening to this company, that they are getting burned with foreigners. Whereas they, like, Inamura wasn't even on a big spot in this card if it hadn't been for Michael Elgin missing. And he, once again, he's not in the N1 victory tournament as well. And I don't know why, because this guy really is the guy that they should put in these situations. So, to make a long story short, bringing in Michael Elgin was obviously not a good decision. I'm just hoping that they learn from their mistakes once again. I'm not hopeful. But the guy really, I don't know, he needs to stay away from wrestling. It's apparently it brings him so much trouble. It's not good for him, apparently.
But to me, this is just sad. Like, this is just a sad situation, in all honesty. I think that it doesn't bring me any joy to dunk on this guy because there's something wrong with this man. And there's something wrong with him. I'm being completely dead serious right now. There's something wrong with this man. He needs to get a lot of help and he needs to stay away from wrestling. And shame on Noah for enabling this.
Yeah.
Like, to happen. Like, this is not just a bad decision, not even about booking. Like, you have brought untold criticism to your company from the foreign fans. Maybe he was over with the Japanese fans, but you brought untold criticism. You brought a terrible situation where this man, who knows what happened? I don't even care what happened. We know the police brought him in for some reason. So to me, that's all that needs to be said. Case closed. Like, the police brought him in and he's out of the country. That's all I need to hear.
Yeah.
But there's something wrong with him. And I hope that this never happens again. And if they bring him in, if any company brings him in, unless there's a really extensive changes in this man's life and this mind, then to me that's abhorrent behavior, like by a company. Like, you know, and we've seen guys get brought in, some really sketchy guys, like in the past. And, you know, but this, you're enabling this man by doing it. And you hurt the fans. A lot of the fans were upset about it, and rightfully so, like for all of his past.
There was a lot of backlash against the company because they just wouldn't say the reason that he was missing. There also was a lot of backlash from Japanese fans against those that were making speculations about him missing, saying that they shouldn't like slander people online. And there, a lot of stuff gets mixed up with these discussions sometimes. And ultimately, is as you said, it's just a sad story.
To me, the healthiest thing for everybody, when he makes a Twitter post, there should be zero retweets on it or quote tweets or anything like that. He should be completely ignored.
Yeah,
when he does this, that's the best. Not just for him, but for the fans.
Yeah, but you know, like, even in the statement that he had on Facebook today, under his personal account, he said that probably someone will post it on Twitter, and then he himself did it.
Yes, I saw that, and that's exactly my point. Like, this man wants attention.
Yeah.
If you quote him, he will respond to you and tell you how you don't know what you're talking about.
Mm.
What good is that going to do anybody at the end of the day? Other than giving him attention. That's all you're doing. Like, so to me, I can somewhat see where those fans are coming from. It's not even about him, because like I said, he's done a lot of bad things that's on record, and there's been some really bad stuff that's happened with him in his life. And like I said, he should have never been brought in. And from a moral level, from a fan level, from a moral level on the company, because you're putting everyone in these situations that they shouldn't have to be in. Like, so to me, this man, I want him to, I don't like talking about him. I don't like seeing him. I don't like seeing his tweets. I don't like people dunking on him. There's nothing that can come good from interacting with Michael Elgin in any form or fashion. If he posts a million tweets in the next week, like, to me, he should be ignored until this man gets some kind of help, some kind of justice. Something needs to happen with this guy, because it's a terrible thing that he got brought in. And shame on Noah, because they, and I know that they, never mind this situation, just them bringing him in broke a lot of people's trust. And it should have never have happened. Like, this situation never should have happened. And, you know, shame on him for constantly doing this and lying. But it feels like somebody who, there's something broken. He doesn't want to take responsibility for anything that he's done and just wants attention. That seems to be his only end game. And, like, there's times where we talked about it before with, like, Onita. Like, that's a guy whose character as a person thrives on attention. But this is different. Like, this is not publicity. Like, this is somebody who is just made a lot of mistakes in his life and done a lot of wrong things.
This is just self-destructive. With Onita,
absolutely,
it's a gimmick.
Yeah, exactly.
He of course, is an attention seeker. We've been over this for...
And there's been others. He's not the only one. Even now, look at Tom Nakano, his
right.
Mentee.
Right. We've compared that. Her, too. Yes, we did.
And it's not just him. It's a million people in wrestling. But that's different as a gimmick. Is different than what we're seeing here. This is a man who's in a I don't even know what to say about him. You know, it's just a bad situation. He never should have been allowed in Noah. And if he ever comes back, like, even I will probably, you know, I'm going to have a hard time getting over that, you know, if they bring him back in, because I think that you're hurting the fans, you're hurting your matches, your shows. They had to change this, and thankfully it got better, but you're not doing right by any single person by bringing him in. And just shame on all parties involved with that situation, in my opinion. But the one good thing about it is that it happened in time for us to make this change, because the match was a lot better for it,
yes,
in my opinion. And it was a lot better. Like, even if he came in and had this great match, the fans wouldn't have been able to rally behind that because of all of his baggage that he brings and all the terrible things that he's done in his life. A lot of the English fans wouldn't even be able to appreciate it on a wrestling level because of that. And here we have the wrestlers that belong here, even a foreigner, and Thatcher. He's done nothing wrong. There's nothing against him. Just a tremendous professional wrestler, one of the best in the world, and he's bringing in great matches, and that's what we need to see more of. And hopefully they learn something
from all of this. That's what he is. He is a professional wrestler.
Absolutely. And hopefully they learn something from all of this. Because yes. I thought it was a spectacular match, in all honesty, and I'm very happy to not see Michael Elgin ever again, hopefully, in all honesty.
Yeah. Okay. I think we can close that chapter now.
Yeah.
And... like, hopefully never talk about it again, because...
Yes, I completely agree.
You know, it's really sad. So, I mean, the first 5 to 6 matches of this show, I mean, they were all okay. I liked the opening match. The 8-man tag with the juniors was really good, I thought. I think that Hiroki had some tremendous moments in this match. Daisuke Harada as well. Shuji Kondo with the finish here was very good. Everything after that, like this 10-man tag... Eita and Suzuki against Ogawa and Suzumu, Ninja Mac versus Dante Leon. The hardcore match was pretty fun with Masato Tanaka and Rob Van Dam defeating Nosawa and Super Crazy. Nothing that I would have put on a Budokan card, though. 6-man tag, Shiozaki, Fujita, and Sugiura versus Kongo, Nakajima, Soya, and Masakatsu Funaki. Thought also was a good 6-man match. Nothing to me until this point on this card really felt like a... one of the biggest shows of the year. Didn't feel like that to me, which is why ultimately I ended up giving this a 7 out of 10. There was then the Kaito Kiyomiya versus Keiji Muto match, and I'm very interested in your opinion on this match, because I was actually hooked to the screen, because once again, after a long, long time, Kaito Kiyomiya looked and felt like a real star. Synonymous to what we said about Kenno, I really thought that he made a big step forward, and that Keiji Muto also, similar to Satoshi Kojima, gave Kaito Kiyomiya a whole lot. So what's your opinion on this match?
I thought this was by far Muto's best match in Noah. Yeah. Like a completely unbelievably fantastic performance from Kiyomiya.
Top of that was just Kiyomiya was bumping around for this guy. Like he was bumping all the time when Muto was just like standing next to him. Kaito Kiyomiya would do this incredible bump. And then they went for the Frankensteiner. And if it hadn't been for Kaito Kiyomiya, Keiji Muto would have been seriously, seriously hurt, I think. Because he was not comfortable on his legs on the top rope, but he wanted to go through with his Frankensteiner once again. And Kaito Kiyomiya was the exact right guy to do it with on this given night. This was tremendous. This made me applaud while I was sitting there. I thought that, as you said, Muto, his performance, hats off to the guy working so hard, but also Kaito Kiyomiya was just tremendous. And he once again proved that he is much more than they've given him in the past 2 years.
Kaito's one of the best pro wrestlers alive. Like, let's just say it how it is. In terms of an in-ring performer, he is one of the absolute best wrestlers in the world, in my opinion. Unfortunately, they haven't put him in position to show it a lot. But I always say, when he does get that chance, just look at that tag match last year with Inamura, Takeshita, and Ueno. That was a match of the year candidate. This here was with a guy who this match had no business being as great as it was. But through his effort, he made it that way. He made it as great as it was because that shows you the kind of level that he's at. This blew away. Like, it's not even a close. There's no close second, in my opinion, to Muto's Noah run to this. And like you said, the drama they were able to build, I think that's what Muto really brought to the table. I don't think his wrestling, to me, this was a one-man show in ring-wise. Like this was Kaito just putting on an unbelievable performance. And Muto stepped his game up to the best he could. But what he really brought to the table was the drama factor. Because of how things have gone throughout so much of his run, because of everything they've done before this, that brought so much extra drama to this match and added so much to when Kaito finally won. This was a really great match, in my opinion. It's right on the level of the tag match and the main event. It's close, you know, the main event in this match was very close. I think all of these matches were great matches, honestly, with how they did. Like, I thought all of them were hits. The undercard, I mean, I thought that Ninja Mech match was really terrible. Like, I think Leon, you know, this is like indie. You can't get more indie than this guy.
No, this was a complete GCW showcase match on the Budokan show that completely felt out of place. And you can think whatever you want about this shooting star cutter thing. It doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of it all. It's just a spot of many in this match. But this was a match that just did not belong on this Budokan show card because it completely felt unorganic compared to the rest, even compared to Rob Van Dam and Masato Tanaka versus Nosawa and Super Crazy, because you can bring up the history between RVD and Tanaka here. This just was displaced on this card. I'm not saying that they don't have a place or that Ninja Mac doesn't have a place. Maybe Dante Leon can improve in Noah. I don't know. But this show, this match, it didn't fit.
Yeah, you know, but I would say the undercard, I think most shows in Japan nowadays, the undercard doesn't matter that much. Yeah. Like, it's always the big matches. I think, you know, you'd struggle, I would say, to find a show that had a full great show. Like, mm-hmm. But it's, in terms of
we've talked
three
about
matches,
some on our last show, actually.
Yeah, we had a couple. I like, obviously, like, that the Hana show was something way above everything else, in my opinion. Everything else, I mean, was there, like, a fully great show this year that we could think of? I mean, the great show where Lindemann won, I would say that was a complete show with the tournament and stuff. But this, like, you know, besides that, I'm really wondering, because was this show better than the New Year show to you, the January 1st show?
Oh, wow.
Because I think this was clearly better.
I actually haven't made the comparison. I would have to look up what I thought about the January 1st show. Let's see. I got my...
That got a lot of votes for Show of the Year, but I know...
Yeah, I thought the New Year's show was slightly better.
I'm surprised by that, because that show, that was cool and all, but this show came across so much more hopeful and positive, in my opinion, by the end. Like, that show was a good show, but to me, there was no match on that show better than any of these three, in my opinion. You know, the main event was really good. Yeah, like, the main event was really good, but, you know... Like, to me, this show was better in all facets, like, in my opinion. Like I said, I really think it is one of the best. But even then, I think we have to look at the feelings that it had, because I think seeing the big wins for these guys gave a lot of people hope. I mean, this was the most positive I've seen people on Noah, probably since that New Year show.
Yeah, and apparently it's really not that hard, right? You just have to do what the fans actually apparently want. In pushing their own talent. It's not
hard. This showed you what Noah could be. But I've always said, look at the talent of the companies. Noah was the best company. If you just look at pure roster. But they use it so poorly up and down that it makes their shows hard to get invested to at all. This is a good first step to making that happen. But going forward, you know, I was stunned at that it happened this way. I had no... expectations that Kojima would lose the title. Kaito, I know some people were talking that Kaito could win. You know, I was really riding with Muto until proven otherwise.
We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. We were saying there's no way Muto will lose his first retirement road match. Was that sure about that?
And it happened differently. So we have to praise him. Listen, we can criticize them when they do wrong, but we have to praise them when they do right. And hey, on Muto's part, I'm much more interested in this series now than I was if he had won. Because now that throws a seed of doubt in his future matches, you know, going forward. So that makes it even better. It helps everybody. It was totally the right call. And I wish, the only thing I will say is, I wish that they had built up Kenno and Kaito a little bit more heading into the show. You know, at Cyber Fight Fez, Kaito was in a nothing match.
Mm-hmm.
Kenno was in a comedy match.
Do you think that Keiji Muto making this decision to retire changed everything?
Maybe it did. You know, we have to consider it. On paper, at first, I just thought, you know, hey, we've talked about Onita earlier. This guy, I think, could be right up there in terms of our Japanese carny list, I would say. But, so on paper, I was thinking, hey, this is BS. He's going to do this series, draw some big houses, and then he's going to keep wrestling. But, you know, no, now that this has happened...
I mean, he came in with Final Countdown, so...
Yeah, another great...
If he then just returns after using Final Countdown, that would be something.
No, you can't count out Muto. No, this man, he's always looking
for the
thing about...
There is no Final Countdown.
There's never a Final Countdown. But I will say that I have much more interest in seeing this now. I think it's much more of a possibility... And I think this match directly helped it. So again, I think this loss was actually good for him as well as Kaito.
Yes, yes, absolutely. So great show for both Kaito Kiyomiya and Kenno. I mean, that's two of these guys that they should really rally around and that they should make sure become big stars for the company. And do we have anything else on this show?
Nah, just got to say that I thought it was a big show, big surprise wins, and let's get to N1 now. Let's see what their lineup is.
Exactly. So N1 victory, the NOAH number one wrestling league. It starts on August 11 and runs all the way through September 3rd. So basically, this overlaps with G1 Climax for a week, and then we got another series of tournament matches with a big company in Japan, so we're getting spoiled here, I think. They went back from the 4-block system to the 2-blocks. Do you think they did that because the G1 is now 4-blocks?
I don't know, but it was a bad move. Like, they should have kept the 4-blocks, to me.
Yes, it was much better.
Yeah, we saw it in the King of Gate, I think it was also better with the 4-blocks of the two that they had here. So I don't know why they did it, but... I don't like the call, especially considering who they left out.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So, Block A, Kenno, Katsuhiko Fujita, Goshi Ozaki, Masato Tanaka, Masaki Mochizuki, Hideki Suzuki, Eliol der Dr. Wagner Jr. and Anthony Green coming in to the tournament, which I thought was weird because on commentary, Anthony Green said that he wants to win the Junior Heavyweight Championship. But now he's in the heavyweight tournament. Did nobody tell him, Dylan?
Last second call. Maybe they had somebody in mind and like it didn't work out. And they said, no, it has to be Green. So, now we can't use these other guys. We got to put you in.
Yeah.
Maybe he can wrestle as a junior. We saw Suzuki or Kotaro Suzuki in last year.
Right.
Still as a junior. So maybe he'll still be a junior afterward.
Yeah, well, Mochizuki is there too. He can also be a junior, but he's wrestling as a heavyweight. So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, if you have told me like 1 week ago that there would be a Katsuyuki Fujita versus Anthony Green match, I would have said, no, I'm not buying that. But we're getting that. We are also getting Hideki Suzuki on this block, which is going to be interesting because we know the guy just doesn't lose a lot. So I'm anticipating at least 2 time limit draws for him to keep him out of contention. Yeah, who's winning this block?
So to me, when you look at this A block, I first of all, I say Hideki should have all time limit draws. like no losses on their schedule for him. But I mean, I will say this. Like this tournament, up and down, these are great blocks, like to be honest with you. Very interesting, varied styles. Look, you're getting a Mochizuki versus a Hideki match.
Yeah.
I mean, who could have ever have predicted that? You know, that's crazy. You know, at the end of the day, that doesn't make any sense. How is that match going to look? What's going to happen in it? Who knows?
You can also say that about any Wagner Jr. match, too.
Yeah, Dr. Wagner Jr. Yeah. He's a guy that he's mainly been a tag worker with Dupree, and they're giving him a shot here on his own. He has a lot of great talent around him. He's going to have to step up, and hopefully he does that here. But yeah, this block, to me, I think is going to be interesting. Who's all in this block again? Just read the names real quick for me.
Yeah, Kenno, Fujita, Shiozaki, Tanaka, Mochizuki, Hideki, Wagner Jr., and Anthony Green.
I think this block is a little bit more wide open than B block, because I think there's a clear winner in mind for that one. So I think you could go in different ways. I could see Hideki making the finals of the tournament, honestly, as a tag team champion. Take a loss or two to set up tag title defenses and go on there. You know, you have someone like Go, I think would be the one to point at. I think he's the favorite of everybody. And
yes.
Besides that, you know, you can't count out Fujita either.
Mm-hmm.
It never lost the title. I think he might...
Oh, yeah. Talk about a guy who doesn't lose a lot.
Yeah, he might be the one I think wins this block, actually. Because he's never lost the title, and that'll set up a final going forward for B-block.
I can see that. Yes, yes. Block B. Masakatsu Funaki, still the national champion, right?
For now, although Fujita's going for that, so...
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, they announced that'll be a match for the title.
Funaki, Kaito Kiyomiya, Katsuhiko Nakajima, Takashi Sugiura, Masaki Tamiya, Satoshi Kojima, Timothy Thatcher, and Sublime Every Time, Dylan, Jack Morris.
Does anybody know who this man is?
Dylan and I tried to figure the connection out before doing the show off the air. We went through his match history, but we couldn't find any connection to Pro Wrestling Noah. And apparently, like, also nobody of the people from the UK that I follow know the guy. I think Shauna knows him. But she also goes to a lot of shows in the UK, to a lot of smaller shows, too. So I'm really wondering how this guy ended up in the tournament. I can't even say if he's good or bad. I just have no idea who he is.
That's the thing. A lot of people are dunking on this guy, and I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Because I have no reference point. I don't even know how big he is. I don't know what his size is. I don't know what he looks like. If he walked into my front door right now wearing a shirt that said, I am Jack Morris, I wouldn't know who this is. And that's how nondescript this man is. And that's nothing against him. I know I've lived this life of being an unknown pro wrestler, Jack, but it's just like, how did this happen from the Noah perspective? That, like, is it possible? And we talked about Green and this guy, like, in all seriousness, I said we weren't going to bring him up again, but is it possible Elgin was slotted for this tournament?
Well, Elgin was clearly slotted for this tournament, but he, I think, was in the position for Anthony Green.
And that could very well be true as well. So that would at least explain one of these things. But Morris, again, I have an open mind to him. I don't have any knowledge of him at all. I don't know if he's good. He could be the greatest wrestler in the world, for all I know. But I just have no background knowledge of him. So at the very least, it'll be a fresh face. The sad part is that, you know, obviously the big name missing here is Inamura.
I think that's
led to some negativity on this guy who's done nothing, like, wrong to deserve it at all. Like, but unfortunately, he's the one that people are pointing at as, like, how could he be in and Inamura not be in? So, and it doesn't make any sense. Like, people were bringing up Fire Festival.
No.
Tanaka is also in the Fire Festival.
Yeah.
And it's very tournament. So, how does that make sense?
It doesn't. It just makes no sense at all to leave Inamura out of this tournament.
Here's why I think that happened. I think that this is actually, in a way, a sign of a good thing for him, believe it or not. Because if he were in this tournament, guess who's taken all these losses? And him not being in the tournament prevents these singles losses that he would take, inevitably take, being in either block, in A or B block. I think he would lose all of his matches.
So we leave him out of the tournament because they just don't have anything for him? That makes them look like the worst company, actually.
Well, no, they don't. It's not that they don't have anything for him. It's that they don't want him to lose so much. And if he like, who would he
beat? Yeah, but why can't he just win?
Okay, who would he beat?
I don't know. If this is a guy that is your future guy, he should...
But they like, don't see him that way.
Yeah, then there is a bigger problem with Inamura and Noah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. But what evidence is there that they see him that way? Of his entire career?
Right now, there is none, no.
Exactly.
True. So, but he should be.
Yes, well, that's a totally different discussion, Strick.
I know.
I completely agree with you on this. I'm not arguing. Inamura, I mean, the minute this guy walked in, he's like Okada in All Japan to me. When I saw him right away, I said, this guy could be a main event player. Like, and he could be one of, not just a main event player, he could be one of the best performers in Japan with the right guidance and the right, you know, how if everything broke his way. But unfortunately, they just unfortunately have never really given us anything. There's no reason to hope for this guy at all at the moment. Maybe a year or two down the road, they'll have something for him. Maybe. We hope. There's no evidence of that, but we hope. But right now, if he were in this tournament, realistically, if we were going to do a pick'em like you and Flosh did for G1, and he was in Jack Morris' spot, who was he beating? Or Anthony Green's spot?
Well, if he's in Jack Morris' spot, he could realistically defeat Kitamiya and Kiyomiya and score one upset.
He wouldn't beat Kiyomiya. I think after Kaito beat Muto, he's not going to lose to Inamura at this point. I think the only one he could beat is Kitamiya. And that even then, I'm not super confident.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but and that's what I'm saying.
It's so crazy, but they did actually build up a story because he wouldn't accept the loss and he was attacking Hideki Suzuki and Timothy Thatcher was dragging him off him, but he's not in this block.
Well, that's unfortunate because that would have made a great story if they wanted to do that. But like I said, unfortunately, they just don't see him at that level right now. It's the same thing with people saying, oh, Kenya Okada should be in the tournament. What evidence is there that they see this guy at that level at all? In any way?
Yeah.
And it's a shame. I don't agree with it. If Dylan was in charge of Noah, that this wouldn't be happening. Inamura would be in. He'd be alive on the final day if I was in charge. But unfortunately, that's just not how they've used him. So to me, it does. It's not crazy that it happened. It's crazy because he, like you said, he should be in the tournament. He should be winning matches. He should be the future of the company. I think he's got as much potential as Kaito. Actually, as a top draw, if they wanted, but unfortunately they just, and like I said, I've said this before, I said this a few months ago, this man's turning 30 soon. It's not like he's some young pup. You know, that I think people get confused about that with him and Okada. These guys are getting a little bit older. You know, they're not 23.
Yeah, and Okada is another guy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like he's another guy.
Okada is never happening.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Everybody, when these brackets were announced, everyone was like, Inamura and Okada should be in the tournament. But they don't book them like that, though. And that's the sad part, you know. And I understand the frustration of it, but when you look at how they book, again, we can't run the company ourselves, you know, as fans. We wish we could. But when you look at how they book, this is, like I said, it's somewhat logical. But it shows that they at least see something in him to not want him to lose seven times in a row, and which was probably what would have happened if he were in one of these blocks. And they've decided, screw it. He's in the Fire Festival. Leave him out. It makes the tournament worse because he's a great worker. He'd have great matches against all eight opponents he'd have, or seven opponents that he would have. But, you know, I mean, that's my theory. Maybe they view him so low that they wouldn't even give a crap if he lost all those matches. And they just decided, no, we need a foreign guy. We need Jack Morris in the tournament. But I do think that there was some thinking of that like, hey, like this guy has something. We don't want to push him right now, but we also don't want him to lose seven times in a row. So I feel
it's weird placing for him between a rock and a hard place, but I get where he comes from. Yeah.
And again, I don't agree with this. I'm not defending it at all. I'm just that feels like that. That's how that I read that. That they don't want him losing all these times in a row. And instead, you could have a Jack Morris maybe get one win in the tournament at most. And you don't lose anything. Even if he's the greatest wrestler or a terrible wrestler, his wins and losses aren't going to matter. It's more of a personal fulfillment story for him if he could show that he belongs, which is a story in and of itself, to be honest. But you obviously would have rather had Inamura, who, as I just said, could be the best wrestler in the company, like if they wanted to give him a shot at that.
So who's getting all these wins in Block B? Who do you have to face Fujita?
You know.
When I looked at these two blocks, the first thing I had in mind was Goshi Ozaki versus Kaito Kiyomiya as the final. Would also make total sense with Goshi Ozaki's renewed claim of I am Noah, and with Kaito Kiyomiya being on the up and coming now, being on the rise again. I guess he will have the right to claim that he is Noah as well. So that could be a story for the final. Otherwise, I don't really see anyone that strikes me right now.
A rematch of that amazing match in April. That was an incredible match.
Yes.
We kind of go, too. So I'd be into that.
Me too.
What do you think of the tweet that came out today? Keno posted, and the Noah Global account at Noah Global posted. Keno said, who's the biggest rival? The opponent you have to beat the most is Kazuyuki Fujita.
So
they're already hyping Keno and Fujita.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with Fujita in A block. I would rather it be Go, but man, that match was so good too in April. I wish they would do that. In B block, is there anybody else that can even be a guy? No.
As I said, nobody strikes me like they've told the story with Nakajima.
Kojima already.
Kojima was there. Sugiura has been there numerous times. Thatcher Tag Champion. Funaki still has the other title.
He's probably going to lose that before the tournament.
Yeah.
Gina's going to win.
But he's not a guy that they will push in the main event position. But so
no. It's Kaito. Yeah, Kaito's the most logical one. But this is a great block, though.
Yeah.
Whatever Morris adds to it, the other seven. I mean, this is a fantastic block.
Just for Funaki and Thatcher, man, this block is so awesome.
Well, yeah, that appeals to me as a fan a lot. But Sugera and Thatcher, I mean, that's a dream match, in my opinion. Kaito and Thatcher, I think, is going to show a lot. Nakajima.
Everybody and Hideki, Thatcher.
Yeah, Thatcher and Hideki, all of their matches will be great. I think they're like dynamic people that will have amazing matches with everybody. Even the guys that are stubborn old guys like Funaki and Fujita, Hideki and Thatcher will get the most out of them. Going in, Kojima has a lot of new matches coming in there. I think that's a great thing. I wonder, Nakajima is an interesting one to me. I don't think he'll win the block, but watching how they handle him, that's going to be really interesting because he's he had the incident in June with Endo, and ever since then he's been really low key, pretty much. So what are they going to have? I mean, is he going to continue that, or will they have something in mind for him overall? Like just a big win, or will he just lose all these matches? Will he be the one in the Itamura spot and just lose a lot here? Besides, I think Kita Mie is going to take a lot of losses in this block.
Yeah.
You know.
So, looking at the final day of block action, August 28, block A, Shiozaki versus Suzuki, Kenno versus Fujita. There we have it, I think.
Yep.
Tanaka versus Dr. Wagner Jr., and Mochizuki versus Anthony Green. Then in block B, Funaki versus Sugiura, Nakajima versus Thatcher, Kaito versus Kojima. There we have the deciding match. Yep. And Kitamiya versus Morris.
Yeah, that's about where I would have it. The A block is more interesting to me because I think any one of the three guys, Hideki, Fujita, or Go, could feasibly advance to the final if things break right. I don't think Kenno would do it as champion, but the other three, I think, all would. And yeah, obviously, they got the guys who, you know, no offense, but they'll have no chance, like Dr. Wagner and Green and whatever. And they put them away. You know, same thing in the block. You're going to have Kaito and Kojima as the deciding match. Who was Sugiura facing?
Sugiura on the final night. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That, like, I agree with you. I don't think they'll push Funaki like at that level. Who's Nakajima facing?
Thatcher.
Okay, maybe they could put some, like, have those guys alive at least.
Mm-hmm.
Like on the, I don't think either one of them would make it to the final, but I think they could be alive on the final day and at least throw a wrench into things, possibly.
Yeah, they could.
Yeah, but this is a great tournament in my opinion. I'm very excited
it
about
is. I'm not a fan of the two block system returning, but
yeah, I agree.
All the new matches we're getting, they are very interesting, to say the least. With especially with the two technicians in Suzuki and Thatcher coming into the tournament, but also Kojima. So there is a lot to look forward to with the N1 victory. And we are now approaching our final topic for today, Dylan, because there is this other tournament going on at the moment. We have the first 2 days of the G1 Climax, New Japan's 32nd G1 Climax behind us. They were both in the... I really like the name of this venue, by the way. The Hokkaido Prefectural Sports Center, Hokkai Kita Yell. You always have to yell that, you know?
You're fired up about it. I can see it.
Fired up about the venue.
Good.
But the fans weren't as fired up about the venue because the attendance wasn't very good. 2,891 fans for the first day and slightly better for the second day. And the last non-pandemic show in that venue did over 6,000 fans in 2019. So a far cry from what they were doing at that point in time. I want to get into some thoughts I had on the undercard because I made the decision to watch the undercard matches for these two shows. I will not in the future, but I wanted to look at some of the guys there. I really think that the act that Tom Lawler has will be over in New Japan very quickly. He's a guy that is able to reach out to any crowd that he is in front of. He had this very short match with Yuta Nakashima, and you could see, yes, Japanese summer is something. It's very humid, very hot, and he had to work hard in that match. I really liked Jonah and Bad Dude Tito in their first match. They beat Toru Yano and Ryo Oiwa in a very quick match. Jonah looked good here, but commentary put over Bad Dude Tito as well. They compared his looks to Steve Williams, and that is a very good comparison for him as a talent. Maybe he'll get over as well here. Nice for him to be on this tour. Royce Isaacs also is on the tour. He had to be... just a manager for Lawler on the first show because there was someone missing, I think, on the first show. But Royce Isaacs definitely left a great impression with the first match that he had on the Sunday show with Tom Lawler against Yoshi-Ashi and David Finlay, throwing around a lot of good suplexes. So good showing for these guys. And except for that, it was your usual undercard shtick in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Nothing that really has to be seen. So if you're
like interested in watching these matches really pick and choose. I'd say, like, watch one of these Batu Tito and Jonah versus Tom Lawler and Royce Isaac matches. But except for that, it's not really like these matches will be setting the world on fire. You can come in for the eventual Young Lion match, but I'm looking at it right now. They are only in six-man tags and tag matches. So, yeah, just watching the G1 matches will be fine, Dylan, I think. So what did you think overall after these first 2 days? What's your overall feeling about this tournament?
Yeah, I thought night two was a lot better than night one, personally. But there was some good stuff here. The first match on the first show was Hanari getting the upset win over Tanahashi. You know, it's got a 6.35 rating on Cage Match. And I think that's about fair.
Yeah.
Slightly above average. Not going to rock the world, but it was a professionally done match and put over Hanari. You know, I had actually predicted this in my earlier G1 pick'em. That's on the Patreon, by the way, patreon.com/Eastern Lariat. Me and Dr. Jonathan, along with his 2-year-old son, who made a run-in on the podcast. We had a lot of fun on that show. But on there, I picked Hanari to win. You know, I know he's had this move, and I forgot about it. I may have made this comment before when he first debuted it. But I love how he calls this finishing move the Streets of Rage.
Yeah.
That was one of my favorite games when I was a small child in the arcade. And they came out with a new one recently after like 20 years. So that was an amazing move name, in my opinion. Top-notch stuff. But as a match, it was solid. Not super spectacular, but a good win for Hanari to get off the ratch, the starting gate, so to speak. The Osprey and Phantasmo match, I was impressed by personally. I thought it overachieved from what I expected, yeah. And I absolutely loved the finish of, Phantasmo getting distracted off of the backslide by looking at the referee, and it leading right into Osprey hitting the Hidden Blade.
It was an amazing finish.
Yeah, great finish, and a good match. Lots of big effort. Yeah, and you know, I'm not always these guys' biggest fan, but I'll never say that they don't have max effort with Osprey in his matches, and he pushed Phantasmo to bring that in, because we've seen it, that junior tournament match against Eagles, that was the best match of that tournament, in my opinion. Like the best of Super Juniors, him versus Eagles, and I think that might have been the highest rated cage match as well. But to me, that was one of the best, if not the best, and it showed the talent that he has when he puts his all into it. A lot of times he doesn't do that, unfortunately. It focuses more on gimmickry, and here you knew Ospreay was going to push him to have that kind of match. None of the matches really overstayed their welcome either, including this one. So I really liked that match.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts?
I really enjoyed Hanari as a heel against Tanahashi. I thought he worked very well on top. And Tanahashi also got his usual spots in. Best portion of the match, in my opinion, was Hanari destroying the air guitar. Really liked that. Was a good spot, and the crowd really ate it up. So a good start for Hanari. And I also really thought that Osprey and Phantasmo was very good. And what they were able to achieve, in contrast to a lot of matches that these two have, is a lot of it felt organic. Like the finish did, you pointed that out, with Phantasmo being distracted and then losing. And also another point was the splash that Phantasmo did, where Osprey rolled out of the way and Phantasmo had to readjust on the top rope. And it felt like it was an audible called by Osprey, but it in the end turned out to be apparently a planned spot, because Phantasmo then had to jump further and Osprey then once again got out of the way. So I thought they did a good job there.
I agree with you that, but I didn't really love the White Sonata match. No. You know, you had a lot of the stalling early on from White. Mm. I wonder what's...
We're really going to get a lot of this in the tournament. Like, all of these matches will be very samey.
Yeah, I agree with that. I wonder what's possessing him, because we saw it at the end of the last show where he won the title. Here, there was a moment where he visibly tried to rally the crowd behind Sonata, which they couldn't do. Like, I
explained it to you last time. He's a heel. He breaks protocol, Dylan.
Yeah, but they didn't. That was the problem.
Yes, you know,
if they did,
I mean, what's the logic, Ben? Is it that the fans are upset at him? That they can't cheer the guy? Isn't that the thinking?
That's some deep thinking, but to me it came across as pretty low wrestling IQ, in my opinion. That's one of the worst things you could do in this era, is really go so over the top with that stuff. There was some good wrestling in between. Then we got to the Gato portion of the match, and this like utterly weird low blow deal where Sonata gave him a low blow. I mean, it was payback because Jay kicked the ropes on him, right? And gave him a low blow. But then Sonata kicked him low, and White begged the referee, like, call a disqualification. And the referee was like, no. Sorry, I don't know. Like, he kicked you in the balls. I know it's illegal, but, you know, screw it. Like, it was very goofy. And then the ending was the thing that I absolutely hate the most. The dance, do-si-do, bull crap wrestling that these two excel at greatly that made me hate this match ultimately, even though there was actually some good wrestling in it. Do you have any thoughts otherwise on this match?
No, I have no different thoughts on that. I agree with most of what you said. And man, I've said that Michael Elgin talks a lot and uses a lot of words, but we're going to hear a lot of talking from Jay White in this tournament.
Well, he's the champ right now, and he did end up scoring.
That doesn't mean that he has to talk like all the time.
That doesn't mean he has to wrestle like he does either, unfortunately. But like I said, it's just like the Noah thing. It's like if I were in his brain, he would not be doing these things. But unfortunately, I can't control this man. He's not a robot. He has decided that this is his way, that this is the best thing that he can do. But so, yes, it sucks, though. And I will not like any of his matches.
Yeah.
And as I never do, because he's not very good. So, the main event. Go ahead and speak on it.
Yes. I thought that, of course, this was clearly the best match of the show, I thought. I really enjoyed this match. This was not the usual Okada match that we get. I thought that in this match there was a lot of back and forth, and Cobb looked extremely good. Cobb was able to counter a lot of moves that Okada had planned, including the Rainmaker with his own version of it. And greatest moment in the match was this top rope gut wrench suplex, where Okada, like, Okada is a tall guy. You have to hold this guy in line on the top rope. This is very impressive to be able to do that. Okada once again, of course, overcame the roadblock that Cobb was, but I thought that he was a very impressive roadblock, and he continued his great G1 run from last year in this match, I thought.
Yeah, you know, I said it on the Patreon show I did for this, like, Cobb continues to be one of the most improved guys. It's amazing how far he's come since that first G1 he was in. Just a totally different performer and among the best, in my opinion. You know, there's a great comment on Cage Match, one of the Cage Match reviews, actually, where it was user Nora Darp, where they said that basically this was one of the most underrated rivalries in New Japan. Because it's not
it
one
is.
That you think as a big rivalry.
Yeah.
And they're right. I point the finger at myself on that, because I don't usually think of them as a major rivalry, but in terms of in-ring stuff, the way they built it, they've done a very great job of building these guys up as true rivals. And I thought this match was so damn good. Like, I totally agree with you. That spot you're mentioning with the gut wrench was so eye-catching. That's the one everybody talked about. But for me, the most impressive thing of this match, in my opinion, was just how pro these guys were when they handled the problems with the ring and with the board coming up.
Mm-hmm.
They expertly moved outside, and it was like totally natural how they handled that. It was so well done that they were able to allow them to fix the ring probably off camera, you know. And that might have been where he bounced off of, you know, when they hit that gut wrench suplex. They had an extra bounce to it there and made it even more spectacular. But I was so impressed by that they were able to handle what, you know, that's going to wreck your match. That's going to throw a wrench into it, you know, if you're just a slave to whatever you're going to do. And Okada's somebody that I always criticize for doing a lot of the same stuff over and over. But here, they showed great high wrestling IQ to avoid that. So I was so impressed by that. I thought they had a great match, and I agree with you. It was the match of the night. But, you know, I actually liked the first night well enough, too. Besides the White and Sonata match, I thought all three matches were good. And I think I would recommend Osprey and Phantasmo in the main event. I thought they were both, you know, 7 out of 10 or higher.
Me too. I would definitely recommend these matches as well. There were two matches on the second night, though, that I thought, maybe not the Ishii versus Taichi one, but I loved the Zack Sabre versus Kenta match more, slightly more than the Okada versus Cobb match. So I would give that match the benefit of the doubt here, or the edge. I mean, Zack Sabre and Kenta, first of all, I love that once again on commentary it was brought up that they have a history in WXW, history stemming back to Kenta and Noah coming to Europe years ago. And I thought it was just this scrappy brawl between two guys that had this love and hate relationship with one another during the match, because it seemed that they clearly respected one another. But then again, they threw kicks at one another, and in the end, Kenta also was very disrespectful to Zack Sabre Jr., so they went back and forth with their love and hate for each other. And to me, it was just interesting to see that they did this as this complete close distance match, where it was a lot about holds. Zack Sabre and Kenta were on the ground a lot, and even when they were standing up, they were always in close distance to one another. There was this moment where they were on the ground hitting elbows at one another, and they both decided, okay, we're going to get up. And they didn't like go out of their way and didn't get back into the corner, but they stood there and just threw the elbows at one another. I also thought that Kenta was very vital in putting over Zack Sabre Jr. in this tournament. I mean, we all know that he is this deadly submission guy, yes. But within the G1 climax, you sometimes have to establish these stories once again for the untrained eye. Maybe there are new fans coming in. So Kenta had this match won, but he was too cocky to put Zack Sabre away. He wanted to show off. And that led to his demise, and Zack Sabre put him away from the ground position, so Zack Sabre can win any match from any position, and Kenta looked like a fool here. He has to be livid with this, and there will be another story with this relationship, with this rivalry, and that's what I thought was what made the match so great.
Yeah, this match was right up there. I think like Ishii and Taichi was up there, but I think I agree with you. This was a match of the tournament through the first two nights. It was the first one where there was this, it felt like G1 had
exactly.
It, you know, like it felt like that had that. And hey, for Kenta, this felt like to me that he brought out a little bit of the old Kenta. Like the one that I love so much, like the 2006 Kenta level, because this match was about beating the hell out of Zack Sabre Jr. Like, we've seen them have other matches.
Dude,
that were
all these slaps, man.
Yeah, we've seen other technical-based matches between these guys. They were good. Like, they were good matches. But this was something different. This was, like I said, the old Kenta. I'm here to slap the crap out of you. Even with the turnbuckle spot, he really didn't do any over-the-top Bullet Club, you know, nonsense.
No.
Like, yeah, this was about beating this guy who was a longtime junior of yours and wanted to put him in his place. But Zack was able to use that against Kenta in a lot of ways. Because Zack has grown a lot over the past 15 years, you know, 10, 15 years. And he's somebody that Kenta became consumed by wanting to destroy this man who had put him in his spot as a young boy. As that was a big part of the buildup, was that he was a young boy and he's going to show him that's where he belongs. But Zack showed that he doesn't belong there and had a triumphant win beating Kenta at his own game, pretty much. And you mentioned the holds. There was great, you know, great ring awareness between the two as well throughout the match. I thought some of the little things in this match were so good. The footwork between the two, like their spacing, was so excellent. I thought it was really good stuff overall. This was a great match.
And it also, you mentioned that Kenta went back to some of his old stuff, but then again, it also comforted the 2022 Kenta a lot, because there weren't many big bumps in this match. But still, though, this match was very compelling and very interesting to follow. And yeah, it just had a great formula.
Did you see his promo at the press conference leading up to the tournament?
No.
He did this weird gimmick where, and I completely love this, it was so awesome in my opinion, but he refuses to speak Japanese now.
Oh yeah, I saw that, okay. Yes.
Yeah, and he read off his grocery list. here.
No, he said what his favorite food was.
Yeah, his favorite foods and all this weird stuff. Like, he was saying this weird stuff, like, about his foods and all this. And I thought it was awesome. Like, I'm so into this character. Why is it happening this way? What does it mean? Like, I can't wait to see where it goes.
Oh, yeah. We have to follow Kenta Promos once again in this summer. It's amazing.
Absolutely. And I love him. One of the best characters. Again, we mentioned Kenno earlier, and I think Kenta is right. Like, he'd be the first guy I measure up to him as one of the best character workers in Japan. But yeah, this was a fantastic match. Well deserved his rating.
Yes, you mentioned the Ishii and Taichi match. I also really liked the match. This is the match series I really like because I always know what I'm getting, and they are always at least very good. So once again, this was a very, very good Ishii and Taichi match. It brings out the shooter in Taichi because he also then used this Yokozuna elbow strike, they call it, that led up to the finish. Taichi always is at his top game against Ishii, so also very recommended to watch this one.
Yeah, I thought this was... I would take this over Okada and Cobb as a match, personally.
I can see this. I can see why you think that, and maybe I agree, yeah. Maybe I do.
Well, that had more layers to it. This was a basic match.
Yeah. At the end
of, a very meat and potatoes match. So I wouldn't disagree with anybody who said they liked that match better. But to me, like, Ishii is... He's the star of the tournament, in my opinion. The one that I have the microscope looked up on, because this block sucks on paper that he's in. There's nobody on the level of guys he's wrestled before in the tournament. The Goto's, your Shingo's, Shibata, so on and so forth. There's nobody even approaching that in this block. This block is not going to lead to a lot of good matches outside of Ishii. So if Ishii can pull in great matches and have this great run, I said it last week, if he could do that, to me, he's locked up most outstanding. Because I don't think there's anybody that could do that outside of him. And he is now tasked with this, and he's 1-0. Because I thought this was a hell of a match. And I got to say, Taichi would probably be one of the best workers in this block. I think he might be the second best guy in this block overall. I would clearly take him above, like, Owens and Jay and Sonata as well. Okan, like, he has a unique style, but I would take Taichi, personally. He just is a pure in-ring. So this was his best chance, and they delivered. This was a damn good match. It wasn't at the level, again... This wasn't at the level of their first G1 match, which was legitimately, like, bordering on that match of the year tier, one of the best of the tournament. I don't know if this will be super well-remembered, but with this format, with the four blocks, maybe it will be one of the best matches. We don't know how it's going to play out overall, but I think this was a great match and one everybody should watch. I think both of them were. I liked the Zack and Kenta match a little bit more personally, and it sounded like you did too.
Yeah.
But I think everybody should watch both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Agreed with this one. And I mean, there's nothing I can say about Toru Yano and Jonah. It's every Toru Yano match.
I think we're going to see another. You mentioned Jay earlier. It's going to be a similar pattern.
Oh, yeah.
I think this man may be the cardinal offender of that rule. And I think people are even people who may have claimed to have been his fans in the past,
listen,
I think, are now tired.
I can't hear this anymore. I can't hear the argument anymore for people that see Toru Yano's G1 runs and say this guy is the smartest wrestler, but he does the same stuff every single year. And nobody ever smartens up to it.
And that's been true for a long, long time now.
For 17 years.
Yeah, except for that one year where he was kind of serious after he came up from excursion. But
yes.
Like that was like 15 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
But everything else, it's always the same stuff. But
so then,
yeah. Poor Jonah. I'm really excited about his tournament. Hopefully they have something more for him. But he's a guy that I think he's going to be, you know, hopefully they can give him some wins because I think he's going to be in a tough spot. This seemed like an easy win for him. Yano didn't need this at all. So, like, Yano in this particular format, I don't even know if he serves a purpose, but the fact of the matter is he is over to the Japanese fans, even doing the same stuff over and over. And to my horrible dismay, he is over. But, you know, nothing to say about that. Move on.
Jonah still has one main event with Okada in Osaka, so that should be really good for him to get this match then.
I don't think he'll win that.
No. But this will be a great showing for him.
I just don't know where the wins are going to come. I like him a lot as a wrestler. I think all of his matches are. I think this block is designed for him particularly to have a great run with guys like Cobb, Archer, like a lot of big guys. I'm into that, but I just don't know where the wins are going to come from for him.
Yeah, going to be tough for him.
I was rooting for him.
Me too.
Yeah, and the one match left here is the main event of this show. Didn't this, to me this felt like a weird choice for a main event over Zack and Kenta.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So Shingo Takagi versus Juice Robinson, for the most part, they had a solid match, I would say. It's not that they lighted the world on fire. It felt like that they worked well with one another, but not outstandingly good. And we could see it, especially in the finishing sequences. There was this weird ref bump too with Red Shoes, where the Juice just slapped him and Red Shoes went down. And then, I don't know about that either. Then Juice went for his new finish. Shingo wasn't there for it. Looked like he didn't know what he was going to do there or what he had to do. And then Juice just went for his old finish and came off with a very flat 3 count. Very unfortunate. And then I thought, are we ending this show without a post-match promo? Because Shingo was leaving and Juice was also out of the ring, but then came back and had this promo. It all felt very awkward.
Yeah, things went wrong with the finish. And it really, like you said, it kind of killed the match overall. I wonder if they had some words after that, maybe, to discuss what had happened. But like you said, it was weird. Why was he out of the ring at first? after he'd won, only to come back. But he didn't have much important to say anyway. If we didn't get the promo, it would have been fine. I think Juice could win this block. You know, like he's wrestling Ospreay the last night. Yeah. he came out with the title, and that could be something they want to extend. I'm not a big fan of what I saw in this match. I have to say, this heel gimmick is a fresh coat of paint, which he's had many
for him.
Yeah, you know,
but not overall. In the grand scheme of things, this is not a fresh coat of paint.
It's just the same thing that a lot of their other foreigners kind of did. Mm. You know, more on the nose. You can see his personality, rock hard. You know, Juice Robinson. That's a goofy pun on Dix that you would expect him to make. I don't see a lot in him, to be honest with you, going forward, especially as a heel. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see his tournament going forward. I think he's a guy that they have some big hopes for as a foreigner. I think Bullet Club, this is going to be a heavy Bullet Club tournament in general. I don't think it's impossible that we don't see Bullet Club or House of Torture win all three blocks. I don't think there's a guy in A block that represents him, but the other three, I think they could all make it in. I think it's very possible. Shingo, I thought he wrestled good, actually. Like, the match itself was not terrible. It's just the finish was bad. That kind of killed it at the end of the day. It was pretty good, but not a, you know, you want to leave a good first impression, right? When you're in a new gimmick, even if it's stale and contrived overall, for him, it's a fresh coat of paint. And he didn't leave a good first impression, in my opinion. I think that this was a miss overall. They must have high hopes for him, putting him in the main event. But, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see if he can recover. Maybe he'll break through. He'll get it together, have a great run, get his act down, add some new things, maybe, to this gimmick that hasn't been done by some of the others. I'm not really sensing that from his personality. The promo he cut at the press conference was very, how I would expect it to be. I just, you know, it'll be interesting to see him going forward. But the match was only so-so, and the finish was very bad. And, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, and where we go from here is the show on the 20th in Sendai. That's going to be a stretch to watch, because David Finlay versus Yujiro Takahashi, Tama Tonga versus Chase Owens, Bad Luck Fale versus Lance Archer, and Yoki Goto and Tetsu Naito. That's the one match on the show, actually.
Let me tell you something. I think Finlay is going to put max effort in.
True.
I really think he's going to turn some heads in this tournament. I think that's going to be a good match, actually. I mean, obviously, I'm not a huge Yujiro fan,
Maybe he has a good match every once in a while. He does, yes. I remember his match with Kenta last year was very good too. In the G1.
Well, I don't remember that. To be honest with you. Like, I'll take your word for it. The match I remember was the one where he faced Jay and it lasted like 2 minutes that he had. But he got a win over Ibushi last year in the tournament to start off, so they gave him something. I don't know. Like, he's okay. Like, I don't think Yujiro's a terrible worker. Like, he's just so-so and not as good as a lot of these other guys at the end of the day. But I think Finlay, he is going to carry that match, and he's going to be a guy that everyone looks for at the end of the tournament. I think people are going to point to him and be like, damn, like, this guy is better than we think. Huh?
Would love that.
Yeah, so I'm going out on a limb on that. Chase the Todd guy, no hope. Fale, no hope. Hopefully they just give Archer a big win.
Yep.
I don't know how it's going to play out. It kind of worries me with Fale, because at this press conference they had, Kidani specifically mentioned wanting to do more for Australia, New Zealand, the Oceania area. And I feel like that may lead to Fale getting a push in this tournament, and we already saw him get the tag titles too. But hopefully that they decide that's enough for Fale, because I don't really want to see him getting wins. I put him over.
Put more emphasis on Robbie Eagles.
Now, he's somebody you could build around as the face of Australia. But it feels like they gave him the tag titles in very nonsensical fashion over Cobb and Okan, which that title doesn't matter anyway. But we'll see. Hopefully, but the match won't be good no matter what. Goto and Naito. Naito feels very motivated coming into us, reading into a lot of his promos. He feels like a guy that, to me, I would say Okada is the favorite of this tournament. But if I had to pick a number two, Naito would be my pick. I think he's a guy, because he's been talking a lot about not being on Forbidden Door. Does the company not see any value in me? Maybe they don't care about me. Maybe I'm worthless. But maybe this worthless guy can win this damn tournament and go to the red main event of Wrestle Kingdom. I feel like he cut some really good promos going in there. I think he's very motivated, and I think he'll have a good run in the tournament. Goto, great performer. Just hard to be interested in anything he does at this point, just because they don't, you know he's not going to get any big push or anything like that. But for a utility player, he will do a great job. So I am looking forward to that.
I mean, Naito will have a great tournament because he will always thrive in these main event situations, and he has four of them in this tournament, against Kenta, against Evil, against Goto, obviously, and against Tanahashi. So all of these matches will be high-profile matches. I'm interested to see where that leads for him.
It seems like he's the guy that they're leaning on to really carry this block in terms of main events.
Yes, totally. All right, for me, that is all that we have for now. We'll be following this tournament around.
I wanted to ask one thing. There's a question I wanted to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see this controversy surrounding Kidani heading into this tournament and some of his comments?
I saw some comments from Okada.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll briefly, I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. He was saying that, and, long story short, he didn't say this exactly, but this is basically what he's saying. The matches have been kind of boring lately in New Japan. And the fans haven't been as into them as they should be, and he wants things to do better. And his other comment was that the excursion system is really lame and outdated and needs to speed up more. Like, guys are gone too long. We need to speed this machine up, pretty much. And that led to, like you said, some negative comments. Not just Okada, there were a couple of people that Naito said something too, but a lot of people weren't happy on the roster about his comments for this.
I mean, it's been well established that a lot of ideas that Kidani has gets a lot of backlash from within the guys on the roster. So, I don't know. I wouldn't buy too much into that, because Kidani says a lot of stuff and few of that ends up happening.
But why would he say these matches are not good? Like, that's not something you would ever hear anybody say. That's an owner of a company, especially in Japan.
No.
In Japan, when it comes to owners or anybody in wrestling, I compared it on the Patreon. Remember when Akiyama went to DDT and his comment was like, well, I want a challenge for the DDT title because the Triple Crown Championship's not a real world title. Like, it's not defended around the world. That wouldn't sound that bad in America, but him saying that was like nuclear heat level to me. Like, that you would say that publicly. So why would he say that and criticize someone like Okada, who is a company guy. Like, that's not that to me has no storyline purpose.
No,
that's
why I say I just think that sometimes the guy just goes into business for himself and just thinks whatever comes to his mind. It doesn't think about his positioning.
Yeah, and Okada clearly wasn't too happy about that. And again, that he's been positioned as kind of like the company guy throughout his career. He represents like the company and all the events and everything. And for whatever reason, and Kanani's been doing some weird stuff lately. Look at all this stuff with Ibushi. He was sitting with Ibushi at the Tension show, at the match. Like, what was going on there? Ibushi trying to start his own company now. It feels like he's not very popular in this locker room right now, but I just thought it was very strange to throw these comments out. And I heard, the report was that Nagata's pissed at Kidani for, criticizing the excursion system in the dojo, saying that he trained these guys. That's just a report. It's nothing. It's not like he said it publicly, like Okada, who there needs to be no report. He said it right open, out in the open. But why is he antagonizing the roster right before the G1, I wonder? Like you said,
if in the end it turns out that there will be much more of a different kind of match, Kidani will come out and say, see, I just wanted to motivate them. So maybe that's the idea. Maybe that's where he's coming from. If so, we could all benefit from it because clearly he's not wrong.
I agree with what he said, actually, to be honest with you. Like that seems like something I would say. And I agree with him about the excursions as well. Like, Yeah, totally. And who is the biggest star they've had? Like, who is the biggest native star in the last, since he's come in as Bushiroad? Who has been the biggest native star that's gone on an excursion and come back?
That is a very good question.
Okan?
Probably. Yeah, Okan.
But everyone else has not. They pushed Evil, but he's flopped. He wasn't at that level, to the fans. Everyone else, there is no success stories, really. Roppongi 3K had their run in the junior division, but they're not difference makers or anything like that. You have Wato.
Well, he's not a star.
Hiromu, I would say, would be up there. Mm.
Hiromu is a different story, though.
Yeah.
Because, they let him be himself.
Yeah.
And all the other guys can't.
And you're completely right on that. And hopefully that's how, like I said, maybe there was a mistranslation involved in all this, and what he was really saying is,
I really can't comment a lot on that because I've not seen the entire comment. I've just seen it on Twitter. I've seen it on Tokyo Sports. Okada's comment I have, and to be quite honest, I didn't think a lot of it because it's Tokyo Sports, and there's a lot of stuff that's just nothing but lots of words.
Yeah, totally agree on that. But this particular one stood out to me because there's no logical storyline purpose behind this at the end of the day. So I really wonder what he was thinking with that overall, especially right for the G1. But that to me was like, that made me more interested in the G1.
Considering and maybe how, that's the entire thinking behind it.
And maybe that's what it was. He wanted to stir up some controversy. It didn't really work based on how they drew, and attendance was really bad at the end of the day. But like I said, I thought it was interesting because I actually agree with what he said, actually. Like both of them. I would agree with all of his points. It's just, that's not going to make you popular with the locker room at the end of the day. Yeah. I just wanted to bring that up before we got
into this. Sure. It will be something to follow down the line here with all the matches that we're going to see. And we've said it, we've brought it up, that there will probably be a lot of matches that will look the same, and we'll take Hidani's word for it. So we will probably be back sometime early next week with our next show on the free feed. Except for that, of course, you can follow Dylan's reviews on each show, on every single match for the G1 Climax on our Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat, because that's where you hit the goods, Dylan.
Not just the G1. I've covered everything. I've covered Princess Cup, covered Fire Festival, the first couple of shows of that. You know, a lot going on, and obviously every single match of the G1 will cover. We had the G1 prediction show, as I said, a lot of fun there. There's going to be some good stuff coming up, a lot of content coming up in the next, you know, probably month or so. So, you know, you want to get in on that now, you know, get that big Hosh tier going. You know, big Stardom shows coming up, more Princess Cup coming up, more G1 coming up. There's going to be all kinds of stuff. Dragon Gate Kobe World coming up at the end of the month. I've got a first time guest planned for that show. Super hype for that, for this person. A longtime fan of the show. And, you know, we mentioned him a bunch last week.
Excited.
Yeah. Ah, on there.
Nice.
The Swiss Superman. Come on here. I'm reaching out all over Europe right now, baby. It's not just Germany. I love, like I said, forget every single match. Every single place, whether you're a country, a city, an island, an uninhabited territory of some sort. Zoo, cave, the Arctic, wherever you live. I don't care if you're Santa Claus. You can listen to the Eastern Lariat and have a heck of a time. We talk about all kinds of fun stuff on this show. So hopefully the listeners do agree. Hopefully Godzilla agrees. I think Godzilla's listening to this too. That's why I had to shout him out. He messaged me. And I had to shout him
hopefully
out.
Hopefully Godzilla returns to the sea after Umi no Hi is over, because we clearly don't want to have any destructions.
He, listen, Godzilla needed to catch some rays, man. Like, yeah. He can't stay underground the whole time. He's waiting for his time to shine. Like I said, he's Earth's last line of defense, and we got to respect Godzilla right now for that. But we also got to respect each other, respect the listeners, and respect what we had to talk about. Lots of fun stuff, and I can't wait to come back this weekend. All the G1 stuff coming forward. This is your home for G1 coverage, and you won't get it done like we do it, for sure. Anywhere else.
Great closing words once again from you, Dylan. So I want to thank all the listeners for listening to this show. This has been the Eastern Lariat.
Goodbye. Sayonara.
Worldwide, this is the MLWRadio.com network.